Hi, I'm Carissa Fish. I'm a biopsych major from Dillsburg, and the title of my narrative is Listening. Uncomfortable, leaning awkwardly against the wall in the Southside Cafe. Everyone else has seats, but we arrived late. Can they tell we do not want to come? Shifting weight side to side, listening to a Latina woman recite a poem about the beauty of her superior curves and the way no one can stand up to her. Tension between applauding her pride and feeling threatened. Who are you to say that I am less? But have my people not said that you are less every day through subtle racism? Guilty that I am only here to support a friend speaking, that I would never have come to this night of multicultural expression on my own. Here in the half-lit room with spoken word ringing in my ears, I find myself at the intersection of the prejudices and attitudes I have carried and denied all my life, and the lessons that are making me face them and examine them for truth. Like I said, uncomfortable. I grew up in a town that is 90% white, and I went to a segregated school. Not officially, of course. Any white person in Easton would deny it and probably believe it. I did. But now I recall the way that all of the African-American students sat together at lunch and how we joked that they always seemed to travel in packs. We were afraid of their bold personalities and occasional perceived hostility. As I scan the honors-level classrooms from my high school memories, I see only three minority students. Instead, when I think of the classes I had with students of ethnic minorities, I think of gym. The only times I really thought about race were on my bus route, overhearing the African-American students' lively conversations. And what I remember most is annoyance at their volume and the impression that their ebonic speech made them sound ignorant. This disgusts me, and I never would have admitted it at the time. But if I am going to move past my prejudices, I have to look them straight in the face. The path from my childhood in white, wealthy Easton has led me here, to spoken word night at Messiah College. Here, the multicultural students have a voice, and for the first time, I am trying to listen. Spoken word is rhythmic poetry used for self-expression and social change. It is raw and honest. It is loud and uncensored. It is scary. But I realized that had these speakers been polite, had we had a quiet forum where they expressed their thoughts, I would not have listened. I would have rolled my eyes at one more talk about racism that I did not feel part of and in many ways did not believe existed, and I probably would only have been there for chapel credit. Instead, I am snapped to attention as the headline artists Yellow Rage take the stage. They begin with a piece called Listen, with loud voices and violent words, they denounce the attitudes of my culture. They condemn us for our fake Asian tattoos and how we think that this makes us culturally sensitive. They assault us for pretending to know anything about Hiroshima or the killing fields or signs that read no Chinese or dogs allowed. I feel attacked, but I listen. For the first time, I'm able to hear past the clamoring voice of my own stubborn pride crying out, I never did anything to you. I don't even have any tattoos. Instead, I hear the years of oppression, the insensitivity, the mindless racism. True, I have never met these women before in my life. True, the racism they have experienced is not my fault. But on behalf of our respective cultures, we each have a role to play in healing the gashing wounds. For tonight, their role is to speak out, to tell the truth, and to tell it loudly, to try to fill the void of silence that marks the history of Asian Americans. And my role is to hear their stories. Until very recently, I honestly believe that racism was a thing of the past. I acknowledge that I probably possess some prejudices from growing up with very few ethnically diverse friends, but saw discussions about race as mundane and irrelevant. I was afraid to take a pluralism course because I felt like it would be more of the same, potentially with the addition of some multicultural students who would feel that my opinions as a white person did not matter. Instead, I came to understand that institutionalized racism runs rampant in our society. Reading Tim Wise taught me about white privilege and my involvement in a form of racism to which I was simply born. I learned that whiteness entitles me to advantages both tangible, such as wealth and education, and intangible, such as freedom from the assumption that slanted eyes mean I am an Asian sex kitten. I search my experiences growing up in Easton and begin to see systemic racism and the lack of diversity in my upper-level classes. Perhaps there was none. Perhaps this was only the product of the low percentage of minorities in my school system. Perhaps it was the result of simple probability. But after reading narrative after narrative describing the gradual segregation of minorities, the subtle or not so subtle pattern of pushing them aside into lower level classes and the teachers who believed they were capable of less, I have to wonder. Even if it was a result of the low percentage of minorities in my town, is there not racism here as well? How could I never stop to wonder why there were only a handful of African Americans, Asian Americans, Latino Americans in my town? I still struggle between feeling as though that is just the way it is, that I lived in a predominantly white area, and wondering how far back the reasons for that situation go. Why is it that minority families could not afford to live in my wealthy town? Were they immigrants who struggled to find jobs? Were they born into poverty tracing back to years of slavery, followed by freedom that was just another form of bondage? I also wonder what I lost by not having any minority students in my classes. I wonder what I still lose from having classes that are almost entirely white. I have to question what I am missing. I have learned to stop making excuses and apply a favorite saying of my teacher, Mrs. Dalrymple, to the present state of racism. It is not your fault, but it is your problem. Because it will benefit the underprivileged, because it will benefit me, and most of all because it is right, I am responsible for redressing the wrongs of my race. I have lived in ignorance for so long that my first step is to hear the experiences, stories, and perspectives of those from cultures different than mine. From my awkward position, I take in the stories of the women from Yellow Rage, and more uncomfortable questions arise. These powerful speakers draw pride and strength from their Asian American heritage, and yet they hate the assumptions that others make about them based solely on the tone of their skin and the shape of their eyes. I hear this, understand it, and affirm it, but what do I do with it? If I see your face and begin to tell you that I honor your Asian background, have I not already begun to make assumptions? What if you were adopted and have no interest in claiming your Asian heritage? What if all you truly desire is to be considered American with no qualifiers, and here I am calling you Asian American? You denounce my culture's perpetual questions about how to say certain phrases in your language. Perhaps this small advance is our fumbling way of trying to understand your culture. How do I address the questions that emerge from my struggle with the concept of race? I cannot ask all of the ethnically diverse people I meet about how they would like to be addressed and how much attention they would like me to pay to their heritage. I have learned how to respectfully listen, but now I wrestle with how to respectfully speak.
This has been Listen Up, a Messiah College podcast. This episode of Listen Up was produced by Katie Manzullo. For more information or to listen to past episodes, visit Listen Up's website at blogs.messiah.edu/listenup.